Kuali Tonali, good afternoon. My name is Laura Rios. My native or Mexica name is Yowaltlawis, and I'm very honored to be here and be a part of the closing of this beautiful work that Jane has done for the Bill House. We were here, for those of you that that were a part of the opening, as our Kalpuli, we did a danza presentation to bless, you know, this work and everything that that Jane put into this presentation of all of her collections that honor our ancestors. So I'm very honored to be here and to be in semi-good health, because I kind of got like a little bug yesterday, so I've been kind of like trying to get over it, so maybe don't come too close to me. But I want to go ahead and start off with doing an opening. We sometimes do an opening dance or an opening song, but what I would like to do today is honor our ancestors in our Nahuatl language. So we'll be facing, if you would like to join me, to the east, west, north, south, and then to the heavens and to the earth, to ask them for permission and to honor those ancestors that are here with us and that are always present in our lives. So I think east from here is that way. I think this way, that way. Yeah, I think it's okay. Oh, Mateo. Itzlan cinco Quetzalcoatl, Itzlan cinco Tlahuislampa, Weikali Quetzalcoatl. Oh, Mateo. Oh, Mateo. Face to the west. Itzlancinco in Weikali, Siguatlampa, in Weikali, Xipetotec. Itzlancinco in Weikali, Tezcatlipoca, in Weikali, Mictlantecuhtli, Mictlampa. Itzlancinco in Huitzlampa, Itzlancinco in Weikali, Huitzilopochtli, Yayauqui. Itzlancinco in Tonatiu, Itzlancinco in Nanametzli, in Ilhuicamina, Ometecutli, Ometziwat, Ometeo. Itzlancinco, Tonantzin, Tlali, Cuatlicue, Chalchivitlicue. So just a little explanation of the directions. We honored first the east, which is the home of Quetzalcoatl. Quetzalcoatl is the representation of the wind and the sun as a rising light that guides our existence. And then we went to the west, which is the home of Xipetotec, and it's also known as Cihuatlampa, which is the direction of the women. So that transition of when the sun, you know, hits its zenith, and that transition as the sun starts coming down, and that transformative energy, that is the energy of the women, and that's what we honor on the west. And the north is the direction of our ancestors, our ancestral memory, our past, all of our histories, all of that that is behind us that resides there. So we honor our ancestors and our own selves in the reflection of Tezcatlipoca, which Tezcatlipoca is the manifestation of our ego and our inner self. So we honor that reflection in to the north. And then to the south is the home of Huitzilopochtli, which you will also hear in some of the stories that that I'll be telling today, so that's not the first time you'll hear that name. But Huitzilopochtli is basically the representation of the sun at its lowest point in the winter solstice. So that that energy is when the sun starts rising. So it's at its smallest point. So it's represented by the hummingbird to the left, and that that hummingbird represents our willpower. So it is with all of our strength that we flap our wings like the hummingbird to come to our full potential as the sun in the summer solstice. So it's a whole journey that our spirit and that our earth takes in the manifestation of Huitzilopochtli, or the hummingbird to the left. And a lot of times what, you know, after the invasion, Huitzilopochtli was coined the war god, you know, and it wasn't so much that he was a god or that he was attributed to war, but it was just that willpower, that warrior strength that was given to him. And of course that gets lost in translation when you're invaded. So, you know, just keep that in mind whenever you hear stories about him, that it's not necessarily that he was the god of war, but that his willpower was that strength of a warrior that sometimes gets missed in the translation. And then we honored Ometecutli, Omesiwat, which is the duality of creation. And I believe Jane talked about that a little bit. So, you know, that's also one of the points that I wanted to start off with, was that, you know, we honor our ancestors, you know, and us now that are, you know, kind of reclaiming that connection to our ancestors. We honor that relationship of female and male, of positive and negative, the dark and the light as one whole, you know. So it's never, you know, either one or the other. It's always both. So that duality is actually something that we honor in everything that we do in all of existence. And it really doesn't take, you know, but to, you know, look into the nature of things to see that, you know, it exists in plants, it exists in animals, and so why not in human beings, you know, and it exists in all of the universe. So that that duality is definitely a part of what, you know, this work was inspired by. But Omesiwat, the duality of within the female aspect is definitely what Jane has portrayed here in her artwork. So we definitely want to pay attention to that. And in order to really help me portray how important that female aspect is in the Azteca Chichimeca or the Mexica Chichimeca culture, I wanted to share a short danza with you guys. And this danza is actually attributed to Coatlicue. So Coatlicue, as Jane mentioned, is this painting that we have here in the back of the snake earth goddess. She's the devourer, the recycler, you know, she's the earth mother. So the representation of the female as its strongest and its most powerful and vicious, but at the same time nurturing essence. So so I'll start off with our permission dance. So we do that at the beginning of each danza, and then I'll do a short snippet of the Coatlicue danza. Sorry. Okay, so that was the danza of Coatlicue, and if you noticed, in that danza, of course I was carrying the drum, so it's kind of hard for you to see, but when we first start out, we're going like this. So it's like, you know, that strength and the shields that we carry to protect our children, that's what it represents. And then we also have, so that's the base of the dance. So that's like the root of it, the heart of the dance. And then in this part where we kick, it's honoring the earth. So anytime that you do like anything with your feet that kind of like caresses the earth, that's asking for permission of the earth, and it's also honoring that connection of our bodies to the earth. So that connection is there in that danza. So we're putting into play and into practice those concepts of what these images represent. So it's not just, you know, we have this beautiful image or horrendous image, however you may want to look at it, you know, because to some people they may look at Coatlicue and be like, wow, like that image is something, you know, almost kind of scary, you know, because, you know, there's the serpents and the, you know, the skulls and, you know, all this like really like monstrous kind of stuff going on there. But that's the beauty of the earth. You know, that's the essence of the earth that that we honor and that we know that is a part of us. And then in the second part of the danza, we do the turns. And I actually kind of, you know, did it a little bit simpler because normally what we would do is do a turn and then squat and then turn and squat, but I didn't have that much space or warm-up time, so I don't want to hurt myself. But with the squats, that is representing when we take the energy from the earth and bring it up to the heavens. So, you know, by making that connection with the earth and the infinite is what we try to manifest through those movements. And in the third is this part. Okay, and that part is also to represent the aspects of women. And then the last part where we go like this is the birthing. So that's bringing, you know, into play that aspect of the women warriors as bringers of life. And with that being said, another image that relates to the bringing of life is Tlazolteo, which is over here on this panel. Okay, and Tlazolteo, as Jane had mentioned, was the field theater. She was a healer. So a lot of times when that connection to Tlazolteo is made, a lot of women that connect with Tlazolteo sometimes get tagged as being brujas or, you know, witches, because the Tlazolteo would take, you know, all of that around us that was not good and sweep it with her brooms to make the space clean. And so that connection with the sweeping and the cleaning, sometimes, you know, through colonization and through you know, the fear of the power of women, was attributed to something negative like being a witch or a bruja, you know. So Tlazolteo represents that. And not only that, but she also is the initiator. She initiates women through birth, through childbirth. So it's through childbirth that Tlazolteo, there's four stages in which, you know, in which women live throughout their life, and it's the Xochiquetzal stage, which is our youthful, playful, very sexual in nature. And then you go into Tlazolteo, which is the second, which is the initiation into motherhood, and the filth eater, because you take all of the, you know, all of the irresponsible, like debaucherous behavior of your Xochiquetzali stage, and you clean it up to become a Tlazolteo, the filth eater, and initiate yourself into motherhood. And then Siwateteo was another stage, which is what we have here. The Siwateteo, the women dancing around in the circle. But if you see, there's a big you know, connection in the way that this image kind of represents the uterus, because you know, you see like the women dancing, and you see like the, you know, the bowl, which is representative of life, but then you see like the images inside there that are singing and playing instruments. So that's, you know, that's where we believed that life connected, was through that, through those art forms. So all of this dance and song is very connected to bringing of life, and the responsibility of women to tell the stories, to sing the stories, to teach the dance as part of the continuation of our culture. So in this way, you know, even for people like myself and some of the you know, the women that I know we work with together, you know, spiritually, a lot of that reclamation, not only you know, a lot of us, because of colonization, we don't have the opportunity to be learning from our own mothers, because even they have been removed from our indigenous past. So in order to reclaim some of these, you know, these ideas and these concepts that we connect to the earth, we're learning them from other people, and it's through song and through prayer, through dance. So with that being said, I want to share a song that honors the Siwatateo. Song is actually a song that thank you. So that song is actually a song that that I learned upon one of my journeys in Mexico, in Teotihuacan. I'm not sure if some of you may know where that's at or not, but for those of you that don't, it's located right outside of Mexico City, where the Pyramid of the Sun is at. And this ancient site, you know, is very important to our culture, because it was, you know, believed to be a part of the Toltec, you know, empire. And then, you know, it, as, you know, different eras went about, it became, you know, part of the Mexicas as well. But this sacred site, like right outside of it, a grandmother named Tonalmit, she was basically inspired by this image of the Siwateteo to bring together women from, you know, all over Mexico and all over the world to do a moon dance. So with that image, you know, they just meditated and prayed on it, and they became inspired to do a 4-day fasting and like a ritual, where they brought these women together and put them in a circle, and they looked at different codices to create dances that they would do throughout the night. And it would be, you know, during the full moon. This time that I went was in October, so it was really cold, you know, in like right outside of Mexico. So it was very, very hard, you know. And needless to say, that was the only year that I went. and not that, you know, not that I didn't feel that, you know, that that I was capable of doing it, but you know, at that time, I was barely starting my path on the Red Road, and I wanted to do everything, you know, and one of the big lessons that I learned in the first, you know, couple years of my walking was that you can't do everything, you know, and that these ceremonies are to be taken very seriously, and it's a very committed practice. And I was very committed to the Mexica danza, which has its own obligations and its own, you know, responsibilities that you have to be very serious about. So it wasn't that I didn't want to do both, but I just felt that energetically and financially too, that I could really only commit to one or the other, because, you know, in order to really learn from these elders, you know, you really do have to travel to Mexico and learn from them, or bring them to the United States to have them teach you. So at that point, you know, I visited with the grandmother, you know, a year after, and we received a pipe, and I gave her the pipe back, and she held it for 2 years, saying that, you know, I could come back if I felt that I wanted to, but they give you a salmador on your first dance. And right before my second year was over, somehow that salmador broke, you know. So to me, I felt that it was a sign that I just wasn't ready for that initiation, and I continued to do my work with the Mexica danza and with the medicine ceremonies that I'm currently a part of now. And it's not to say that I wouldn't go back later on in life, but, you know, at this point in my life, I just felt that that commitment wasn't there. But I still feel that the songs and the work that is done in these ceremonies is very important for women, and that it's very important for people to know about, you know, because it is, you know, women taking leadership and opening those spaces up for women to heal, and for the earth to heal as well, with the use of female energy, because it's all, you know, these women getting together and just, you know, really putting that honest, like, hard work to pray for the Mother Earth. And it's a very beautiful experience. So another manifestation of that that female energy, on both, you know, a positive and negative aspect, is the story of Goyol Shalki, which we have right here. So this is this was actually one of the very first pieces that I remember of Jane's, and I was just like, oh, I love her. You know, this was before, like, we became friends, you know, like this was just like, you know, when I lived in Austin, and, you know, some of her work, you know, would circulate, or images of her work would circulate in the community out there, and I was just like, really, you know, like, I think this one was one of them, and probably the Siwateteo, but yeah, I was just really taken by it, because I was just like, wow, that's really awesome work, and just, you know, the colors, and I liked, you know, the way that she incorporated, like, the beads and stuff into it, so I, you know, I felt, you know, really, really connected to the Goyol Shalki identity. And I think a lot of Chicanas do, because, you know, Goyol Shalki is kind of like a dismembered, like identity of us as women, you know, that we become dismembered by ourselves, by society, you know, by our peers, you know, by the invasion. There's so many things that attack women and make us decompartmentalize ourselves, you know, to where we sometimes don't feel whole. But in that feeling, we fail to, like, acknowledge that we are whole, and that we're, not only are we whole, but that we're full of light. And that is what I feel that the moon represents to me, you know, and that's what it reflects back to us every time that it becomes full, and it, you know, and we see it, you know, in the sky coming back to us. So that female energy that's a part of the moon is something very, you know, that I think myself and a lot of other women connect to, because I don't think that I've ever met a woman that doesn't really feel strongly connected to the moon, you know. And so the story of Goyol Shalki was basically that Coatlicue, the mother, the earth mother, was sweeping the temple of the Templo Mayor, which is like the main temple in Mexico City. And while she was sweeping, there is a bundle of hummingbird feathers that fall into her, like, pouch, you know. And when they fall into her pouch, she becomes impregnated with Huitzilopochtli. Remember I told you that we'd hear Huitzilopochtli again? So to Goyol Shalki, and the Sensonwis Nahuac, which is like the basically, you know, the Nahuatl name of the all of the stars that exist in the sky, you know, or Mixcoatl as well, which is Mixcoatl is the universe, you know. And so there, you know, the brothers and sisters and Coyolxauhqui being, you know, the leader of the stars and everything that's in the sky, they become jealous. You know, they become jealous because they're just, you know, like, well, you know, she's going to birth a human, you know, so it's going to be, you know, something different and better than us. So out of this jealousy, they conspire to kill Coatlicue, to kill their mother. And before this could happen, Huitzilopochtli, you know, comes out, you know, like out of the womb, like in full armament, you know, with the shield and sword, and he slashes, you know, Coyolxauhqui into little pieces, and she falls from the temple onto the floor. And after seeing his mother, Coatlicue, you know, being like affected by it, he decides to elevate her to the sky as the moon so that he can, so that Coatlicue can see her daughter every day as manifested as, into the moon. So so that was, you know, that's the story that you typically hear about Coyolxauhqui, which is, you know, just a very beautiful of how, you know, the stories always incorporate the stars and the universe and all of the guardians of the different directions. So I have a song to share about Coyolxauhqui as well. So just a translation of that song is just honoring, you know, Coyolxauhqui as, you know, the moon and the connection to women, you know, honoring that we bleed, that we give milk, that we, you know, give life, and that we're basically, you know, the givers of life, and that this moon is the energy that fuels the mothers, you know. And then the second part of the song, honoring Coyolxauhqui as a dancer, as, you know, somebody that honors movement in the daytime and in the nighttime. So in the nighttime, you know, looking to the sky for inspiration, and at nighttime and in the daytime, giving life, you know. So because even if it's daytime, you know, here on Earth, the moon is still there. So, you know, it's not like it's ever gone. The moon is still present, and it's still present in us. And then just, you know, transitioning on to one of the other images, we have Mayahuel, which is right here. Okay, and Mayahuel has a very interesting story because, you know, a lot of us, you know, that know a little bit about Mayahuel, you know, we identify with the medicine that she gives, because Mayahuel is the guardian of medicines and the guardian of healing. But, you know, very few people know, like, how it came to be that she was given that responsibility or that patron to be that the patron of such responsibilities. But basically, from my findings, it was understood that the gods or the creators and creatresses of the universe were pondering about how they could bring pleasure and goodness into the life of human beings, and after, just kind of pondering about it, they decided to send a Hecate Quetzalcoatl, which I know you mentioned that you had Quetzalcoatl in here, so I thought it was, very interesting. Yeah, so she has a manifestation of Quetzalcoatl right here. So Quetzalcoatl, as we mentioned, is the bringer of light and also represented by the wind. So it's interesting that, that this is kind of how it ties, that masculine and feminine energy together to give us that really strong, healing, like, feminine aspect. Because they send Quetzalcoatl to the earth, and they send him with this mission to, to try to find a way to bring this pleasure and to bring, like, life and happiness to mankind. And so they remembered that there was this beautiful virgin by the name of Mayahuel that was living with the very old abuela, and the abuela was taking care of not only Mayahuel, but like hundreds of other like young ladies, and they're all living together. And so by the time that these young ladies are called the Tzitzimit, so Tzitzimit is usually the name that we give to like the guardians of the night, the guardians of the night in the female aspect. And these Tzitzimit, they also would bring fear, and they would bring superstition to the hearts of man. And if they were very corrupt, they would bring illness. So it was kind of like that that negative aspect of, okay, well, if you're a man and you're like tempted by these things, and we're going to give you like these negative things for being mañoso, So then these Tzitzimet, were all, of course, very beautiful, and they lived with this grandmother. So the god sent Hecate Quetzalcoatl to visit them, and by the time that he arrives to Earth, they're all asleep. But then he wakes Mayahuel up, and he tells her, hey, I'm bringing you to, I'm going to take you to Earth. And she actually was like, oh, yeah, let's go, So she hops on his back, and, they ride down to Earth. And as soon as they touch the ground, they turn into this big tree with two branches. And one branch is a Hecate Quetzalcoatl. The other branch is Mayahuel. And the branch that Hecate Quetzalcoatl was, it was called Quetzalhuexot, which is the beautiful liquid. Okay, so that one branch, represented the beautiful liquid, and then the second branch that was a representation of Mayahuel was called Xochicahuit, which is the blossoming tree. So these two branches are next to each other, and you can see it here. This is the Quetzalhuexot, and this is how do you pronounce it? Sorry. Xochicahuit. This is the blossoming one, the one with the little piquitos. And then this part is the juicy part. So these two parts of the blossoming tree were growing there. But then by the time that the morning came and the abuela, was kind of, counting heads, she realized that Mayahuel was gone. So they frantically start looking for her, and they can't find her. And so she sends the Tzitzimet to Earth, and they start looking for her. And then as soon as they, get to Earth, the grandmother automatically, when she sees this, this blossoming part of the branch, she acknowledges that that's Mayahuel, and she becomes infuriated. So she becomes infuriated, and possibly because, in order to have this, there was probably some kind of, attribution to maybe a sexual encounter, so she becomes infuriated that she's no longer a virgin, and so, she tears apart, like, the branches, and, and they just leave Earth and leave Maya well scattered all over the Earth. So when this happens, they're already, you know, the grandmother and the tzitzimet, you know, go back to their home. But then Ehekal Quetzalcoatl gains, you know, awareness, and he turns himself back into the wind and gathers all of these broken pieces of the Xochicahuitl, the blossoming tree, and along with his, essence of like the pulp, they start planting it all over the earth, and this is where the maguey plant is born. And this maguey plant later on, you know, went to, you know, to be used as, you know, as a rich honey that once it ferments, it becomes a sweet liquor. And this liquor was only allowed to be used by the elders in ceremony. And then, of course, you also get all these other industrial uses out of the maguey plant that are used to make, you know, like fabrics and different types of healing. Because the plant, you can take, you know, you can take the fibers from the plant and create like, I don't know how to say it in English, but cataplasmas, like, I don't know how to say that, but like basically like patches that like help like healing, like really deep wounds and stuff. So this is how we get, you know, the healing and the ceremonial aspects of Mayahuel. So I just thought that was a very, you know, beautiful story to share with people, because a lot of people don't know, you know, the origins of Mayahuel. But basically, you know, that's just the transition of, you know, knowing that, you know, we as women are healers, you know, and that we are, you know, powerful. And these images that Jane has shared with us, these songs that I've shared with you, these dances that I share with you, are all ancestral ways of, in which we become inspired nowadays by our past. And acknowledging that and making a space for them is something, you know, very beautiful. So I'm very thankful, you know, for the Beale House and everybody, you know, from the Beale House that, you know, that allowed this to happen, and for all of you that came out to honor that strength of the woman and the strength of us as healers. And I hope that, you know, everybody enjoys the art and makes it a part of your own personal collections at home if you can, because, you know, it's not very very often that, you know, these spaces are opened up to us. So when they are, it's very beautiful. So I want to thank, you know, every one of you for being here today, and for Jane for inviting me again to be a part of the closing ceremony of this. So I think in order to really, you know, have like the golden, you know, bow around it, we'll go ahead and stand up, and we'll do a thank you song so that we can close off this exhibit in a ceremonial way.
Thank you.
get built. So that song's just giving thanks to the guardians of all of the directions, to the earth, to the sun, to the universe. Just as we opened by asking permission, we like to close by giving thanks. So I just wanted you guys to know the meaning of those songs. And thank you again for inviting me. And I think, did you have a question?
What does Impantlali
mean? Impantlali? No, Impantlali. Yeah, Impantlali. So, Guayoxepa, Impantlali. So we are thankful to you, Impantlali, where you exist.